Okay, let's unpack this. Have you ever stopped to truly consider the incredible engineering marvel that is your own body? How it moves, how it supports itself, and you know why sometimes it just doesn't feel quite right. Today we're doing a deep dive into the fundamentals, anatomy, biomechanics, and posture analysis.
The real building blocks.
Exactly. We're drawing from a great source. It's actually a study guide for movement pros like Pilates instructors. So it's packed with foundational stuff.
Really solid information.
And our mission today, it's to distill all that, sometimes complex info into clear, actionable insights. Basically give you a shortcut to understanding the mechanics of your body.
And what's fascinating here, I think, is how these concepts, the stuff often learned professionally, apply directly to everyone's daily life.
Right.
Understanding these principles isn't just for instructors. It really empowers you to move with, let's say, more awareness and efficiency.
Definitely. Think of it as getting a new owner's manual for yourself.
A better lens to view yourself through.
Yeah, absolutely. So to really get movement, we got to start with the frame, right? The literal backbone. Let's talk bones. Like when you sit down, you probably feel your sits bones. The official term is ischial tuberosity. Those, plus your tailbone, the coccygex in the front pit, the pubic symphysis, they form the base of your pelvic floor.
That sort of diamond shape at the bottom, crucial base.
Super important for stability.
Yeah, and speaking of stability, here's something that always gets me. Your adult head typically weighs around 10 to 14 pounds.
Get out, really?
Yeah, 10 to 14 pounds. Just imagine the work your neck muscles are doing all day long, just holding that up.
Wow.
And it helps to know the landmarks, the occipital bone at the back, the maxilla upper jaw, mandible lower jaw, but really just grasping that weight,
Yeah.
it's significant.
10 to 14 pounds. That's like a bowling ball.
Very
Seriously.
much.
No wonder so many people have neck tension.
Right.
Okay, moving down. The core of the structure, the spine, made up of segments, right?
Right.
Cervical in the neck,
Seven vertebrae there.
thoracic in the upper back,
12, where the ribs attach.
lumbar in the lower back,
Five big
and
ones.
then the fused bit at the bottom, the sacrum.
Right. And those curves you see, cervical, thoracic, lumbar curves, they're not just there for looks. This is where it gets really interesting for like daily comfort. They are crucial for shock absorption.
Like springs.
Exactly. Your body's built-in suspension system. Pretty neat engineering.
That is neat. Okay, so connecting this, big picture, joints. You mentioned stability. What about something like the shoulder versus the hip?
Oh, great comparison. So if you think about the shoulder joint, the glenohumeral joint, the ball of your arm bone, the humerus, sits in a pretty shallow socket on your shoulder blade. Compare that to your hip. The ball of your thigh bone, the femur, fits into this really deep socket in your pelvis, the acetabulum,
Much deeper.
way deeper. So the difference is huge. Your shoulder gets this massive range of motion, right? You can move your arm everywhere. But the trade-off is less inherent stability. The hip, it's built for power. Stability sacrifices some of that range for strength.
So it's form follows function, basically, optimized for different jobs.
Perfectly put. And just a quick one on the forearm, the radius, one of the two bones, actually revolves around the other one, the ulna. That's how you turn your palm up and down.
Interesting. Okay, joints. Ball and socket in the shoulder and hip, you said. What else?
Hinge joints are obvious ones, elbow, fingers. They mostly just bend and straighten. Though, for exercise purposes, we often treat the knee like a hinge too, even though it has a little bit of rotation.
Okay, so that's the framework. Let's move to the movers, the engines, muscles. Quick vocab check first, because you hear these words thrown around. Ligaments.
Bone to bone, stability, muscle to bone. That's how the muscle pulls on the bone.
Fascia.
Fascia, that fibrous connective tissue, it's everywhere, wraps muscles, connects things. Kind of like internal cling film, but way more complex.
And nerves.
Nerves innervate muscles. That means they send the signals telling the muscle to contract or relax, the command center.
Makes sense. And here's a big one. Muscles only pull, right?
They don't coach.
Crucial point. They contract, they shorten, they pull. They can control lengthening, but they don't actively push. Understanding that changes how you think about movement.
Yeah, definitely.
And it raises a key question, like, how do we actually breathe?
Good question.
Well, the main muscle is the diaphragm, big dome-shaped muscle under your ribs. When you inhale, it contracts, flattens, moves downwards.
Creating space.
Exactly. Creates space in your chest cavity, lowers the pressure, and air rushes in. And those muscles between your ribs, the intercostals, they help lift and expand the rib cage too.
So it's a coordinated effort.
Very much so.
Okay. So muscles pull and they contract in different ways.
Right. Three main types we usually talk about.
Okay.
Concentric is when the muscle shortens while generating force.
Mm-hmm.
Think biceps curl, lifting that weight up. The muscle wins against resistance.
Lifting the groceries. Got it. Eccentric is when the muscle lengthens, but it's still under tension, controlling the movement. So lowering that grocery bag slowly onto the counter, the muscle is breaking.
Okay, controlled lengthening.
Yep. And isometric is when the muscle contracts, generates force, but doesn't change length. Holding a position? Think holding a plank. Your core muscles are firing, but nothing's moving.
Holding steady. Wow. Okay. Concentric, eccentric, isometric. Our muscles are doing all three all the time without us even thinking.
Pretty much constantly, yeah, for almost any coordinated movement.
That's backing. Now, thinking about the torso, the core.
Yeah.
How do those muscles work together for movement?
Yeah, it's great teamwork there. Let's break it down.
Okay.
For flexion, bending forward, rounding your spine, your main player is the rectus abdominis, the six-pack muscle. But your obliques on the sides help too.
All right.
For extension, arching your back, straightening up. You've got the erector spinae group, those long muscles running along your spine. Quadratus lumborum and lats contribute too. Rotation, twisting, that's mainly your obliques working in tandem. The external oblique on one side works with the internal oblique on the other side to twist you.
Ah, the cross-body connection.
Clever.
Very clever. And lateral flexion, bending sideways, again, obliques, and that quadratus lumborum muscle in the lower back plays a big role there, too.
So those obliques are busy.
Oh, yeah. Crucial for all sorts of movement and stability.
You mentioned layers earlier with the abs. Can you walk us through that?
Sure. If you go from the deepest layer outwards, you start with the transversus abdominis. This one's really interesting.
Why is that?
Because when it contracts, it doesn't really move your spine like the others do.
Mm-hmm.
Its main job is core stabilization. Think of it like an internal corset. Cinching your waist, supporting your organs and lower back.
So when people say draw your navel to your spine,
mm-hmm.
that's the one.
That's the primary target, yeah. Then layered on top of that, you have the internal obliques
okay.
and the external obliques.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the most superficial one is that rectus abdominis. The six-pack one again, got it. Deepest is that stabilizing transversus.
Exactly. Crucial for low back health.
Okay, what other key muscles should we know about? The source mentions a few important ones.
Definitely. Deep in the spine, you have the multifidus, tiny muscles, but their major role is stabilizing individual vertebrae, especially against rotation. Really important deep stabilizer.
Multifidus. Okay.
Then there's the psoas, big hip flexor. Runs from your lumbar spine, deep inside, down to the top of your thigh bone. Gets tight on a lot of people from sitting too much.
Yeah. The infamous psoas.
That's the one. And speaking of deep hip muscles, the piriformis, it's one of the deep lateral rotators of the hip. Sometimes it can irritate the sciatic nerve, causing pain down the leg.
Ouch. Yeah, heard of that.
Then on the backside, the powerhouse. Gluteus maximus, your biggest, strongest hip extensor. Think climbing stairs, standing up from a chair.
Glute max. Got it.
And its neighbor, gluteus medius, on the side of the hip. Important for hip abduction, moving the leg out sideways and stabilizing the pelvis when you walk. It should ideally fire first in abduction.
Glute med.
Okay.
And the IT band. People talk about that a lot.
Right. The iliotibial band. It's a thick band of fascia running down the outside of your thigh. Two muscles insert into it. The TFL, tensor fasciae latae at the front of the hip, and fibers from the gluteus maximus.
Okay. So muscles pull on it. Quads.
Quadriceps. Yeah. Four muscles on the front of your thigh. Three of them, the vasti muscles, only extend the knee, straighten your leg.
Okay.
But the fourth one, the rectus femoris, is special because it crosses both the hip and the knee. So it extends the knee and flexes the hip.
Ah, two-joint muscle. Hamstrings?
Back of the thigh. Group of three muscles, the one on the outside, the lateral one, is the biceps femoris.
Okay.
And the other two, semitendinosus and semimembranosus, are medial. Fun fact, three muscles attach at one spot on the inside of the knee. The pes hendon, the semitendinosus, a hamstring, gracilis, inner thigh, and sartorius, long strap-like muscle.
Pes and serinus. Wow, busy intersection.
Definitely.
And what about the shoulder? You mentioned the rotator cuff earlier.
Yes, the rotator cuff, super important. It's actually four muscles, supraspinatus, infraspinatus, teres minor, and subscapularis, sits muscles, sometimes called.
Sits the muscles, okay.
Their main job together is to stabilize the head of the humerus, the ball of the arm bone, within that shallow socket, the glenoid cavity. They keep it centered during movement. crucial for shoulder health.
So they're like active stabilizers.
Precisely. And another key shoulder muscle is the serratus anterior. Runs along the side of your ribs, under the armpit, and attaches to the shoulder blade.
What does that do?
It's vital for protracting the scapula, moving it forward around the rib cage, and upwardly rotating it, like when you lift your arm overhead. Weakness here often leads to whinging scapula.
Ah, where the shoulder blade sticks out.
Exactly, like a little wing. The serratus helps hold it flat against the ribs.
Gotcha. And the rhomboids between the shoulder blades.
Yep, rhomboids. Their main actions are adducting the scapulae, pulling them towards the spine, like squeezing your shoulder blades together, and also downwardly rotating them.
Okay, lots of moving parts. This gives us a great map of the players. Let's shift gears now to biomechanics.
The physics of movement.
Exactly. Let's make it visual. Thinking about planes of motion, imaginary slices through the body.
Helps to organize how we describe movement.
Totally. First, the sagittal plane divides you right down the middle, left and right halves.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you see flexion and extension.
Yeah.
Bending forward, reaching back, bicep curls, all sagittal plane stuff.
Yep. Forward and backward movements.
Then the frontal plane slices you front to back.
Also called the coronal plane.
Right. Here you get abduction moving away from the midline and adduction moving towards the midline. Like jumping jacks, side bends.
Sideways movements.
And finally, the transverse plane. Cuts you top and bottom. Horizontal slice.
Mm-hmm.
This is where rotation happens. Twisting your torso, turning your head, rotating your arm in or out.
Rotational movements. Got it.
Knowing those planes just helps describe things clearly. And directional terms too, quickly. Superior up, inferior down, proximal closer to trunk, distal further away,
mm-hmm.
medial towards midline, lateral away from midline, dorsal is back, ventral is front. Useful shorthand.
Definitely. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, all movement involves forces. The source mentions several types. Understanding these helps with injury prevention.
Okay, like what?
There's bending, like the force on your spine when you bend over to pick something heavy up incorrectly.
Right.
Torsion, twisting force. Imagine wringing out a towel. That's torsion. Can happen in the spine too.
Ooh, yeah.
Compression, squeezing force, like sitting slumped, compressing the discs in your spine,
mm-hmm.
tension, pulling force, like hanging from a bar, stretching things out, shearing, sideways, sliding forward. Like if your vertebrae slide slightly forward on each other, not good.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a truck hitting a low bridge that's sheer.
Okay, those forces are acting on us all the time. And the biggest one, gravity.
Absolutely. Gravity is the main pulling force we deal with constantly here on Earth. Which brings up an interesting distinction. Mass versus weight.
Yeah.
Your mass is the amount of stuff you're made of. It doesn't change whether you're on Earth or the moon. Your weight, however, is the force of gravity acting on your mass. So on the moon, with less gravity, you weigh less, but your mass is identical.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
You're still the same amount of you.
Exactly.
So thinking about forces and gravity,
mm-hmm.
stability becomes key. How do we become more stable?
Good question. Several things contribute. A wider base of support spreading your feet apart makes you more stable than standing with them together.
Okay.
A lower center of gravity. Squatting down lowers your center of gravity, making you harder to tip over.
Right.
And generally, having more weight lower down helps too. Conversely, raising your center of gravity, like reaching overhead or narrowing your base, makes you less stable.
Gotcha. And all this is governed by Newton's laws.
Pretty much the foundational principles, Newton's three laws of motion.
Okay, quick refresher.
Sure. First law, inertia. Basically, an object at rest stays at rest, and an object in motion stays in motion with the same speed and direction, unless acted upon by an external force. Think of a golf ball sitting on a tee. It stays there until you hit it.
Right. Makes sense. Law two.
Second law, force and acceleration, EFMA. The acceleration of an object is directly proportional to the net force acting on it and inversely proportional to its mass. Basically, if you push something, apply force, it accelerates. And it takes more force to accelerate a heavier object, more math, same amount, pushing a heavy shopping cart versus an empty one.
Okay, more force needed for more mass.
And the third law, action-reaction.
Right.
For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. When you push down and back on the ground to walk forward, the ground pushes up and forward on you with an equal force.
Yeah.
Rocket launching it pushes gas down. The gas pushes the rocket up.
Action-reaction. Got it. These are everywhere.
Fundamental to all movement.
Okay, another concept. Torque. Sounds technical, but you explained it simply.
Yeah, torque is basically a rotational force. The simple formula is weight times distance. Or force times the lever arm distance, more accurately.
Weight times distance. So that bag of groceries feels heavier, held way out from your body.
Exactly. Even though the weight of the bag hasn't changed, you've increased the distance from the pivot point, your shoulder or spine, which increases the torque your muscles have to counteract. It feels much heavier.
Right. Or using a longer wrench makes it easier to loosen a bolt. Same principle.
Same principle. You're increasing the lever arm distance, so you need less force to create the same amount of torque.
And this impacts exercise, right? You mentioned longer legs.
Definitely. Longer limbs create longer lever arms. So, all else being equal, someone with longer legs will find an exercise like the Pilates teaser harder because the torque created by their legs is greater.
More challenging for the abs.
Yep. But interestingly, longer legs might make something like the roll-up slightly easier as the weight of the legs can act as a counterbalance coming up.
Huh. Interesting trade-offs.
Always trade-offs, and that idea of levers, torque leads right into levers.
Okay.
A lever is just a rigid bar that pivots around a fixed point called a fulcrum. It converts a linear force into a rotary force torque.
Right. There are different types.
Three classes. Most joints in the body are third-class levers. Think of a bicep curl. The elbow joint is the fulcrum, the weight in your hand is the load, and your biceps muscle attaches between the fulcrum and the load to provide the effort. This favors speed and range of motion over force advantage.
Okay, most are third class. What about the others?
You also see first-class levers, like a seesaw. The fulcrum is between the effort and the load. In the body, the example is often the head balancing on the top of the spine. The joint is the fulcrum, neck muscles in the back provide effort. The weight of the head is the load out front.
Head on the neck like a seesaw. Got it. Second
Now,
class.
second-class levers, like a wheelbarrow. The load is between the fulcrum and the effort. The classic body example is rising up onto the balls of your feet. The ball of the foot is the fulcrum. Your body weight is the load acting through the ankle, and your calf muscles provide the effort pulling up on the heel. These levers provide a mechanical advantage for force.
Wheelbarrow, lifting onto toes. Okay, that helps visualize it.
Understanding levers helps explain why certain movements feel easier or harder and where stress might accumulate.
Totally. Okay, bring it all together now. Posture, how our body holds itself.
The sum total of all these parts working together, essentially.
So when we analyze posture, what are we looking for? Any key landmarks?
Yeah, the source mentions the acromion of the shoulder, that bony point on top of your shoulder blade, as a key reference point. When viewing from the side, you'd typically look at the alignment of the earlobe, the acromion, maybe the greater trochanter, that bump on the side of your hip bone, and slightly in front of the ankle bone.
Kind of like drawing a plumb line down the side.
Exactly. And the pelvis is critical. We talk about a neutral pelvis.
Right. What is that exactly?
It's when your ascis, those bony points on the front of your hip bones, are level horizontally with your psis, the bony bumps on the back of your pelvis. And also, vertically, the ascis should be roughly in line with your pubic bone.
Okay, so not tipped too far forward or backward.
Precisely. It's the optimal starting position for the spine.
And when it's not neutral, or the spine curves are off, we get those common postural terms.
Right, like kyphosis. That's an excessive outward curve, usually in the thoracic spine, creates that rounded upper back or hunchback look.
Okay.
Lordosis is an excessive inward curve, typically in the lumbar spine, often seen with an anterior pelvic tilt where the pelvis ticks forward, creating big sway back.
Right. And flat back.
Flat back is kind of the opposite. It's a decrease or loss of the natural spinal curves, especially the lumbar curve, often associated with a posterior pelvic tilt where the pelvis tucks under.
So too much curve or not enough curve?
Exactly. And what's fascinating is how muscle imbalances contribute.
How so?
Oh, well, take that anterior pelvic tilt, the sway back posture. You'll typically find relatively short and tight hip flexors at the front and tight erector spinae muscles in the lower back.
Oh.
Meanwhile, the opposing muscles, the hamstrings at the back of the legs and the abdominal muscles at the front, tend to be relatively long and weak.
A pattern of tight short versus long weak.
Exactly. And you see the reverse pattern with the posterior pelvic tilt the flat back or tucked under posture. Hamstrings and abs tend to be short tight, while hip flexors and erector spinae are long weak. Similar patterns exist for kyphosis and even lateral pelvic tilts.
So posture isn't just stand up straight, it's about muscle balance.
Fundamentally, yes, it's dynamic balance. Then there's scoliosis.
Right, that's a sideways curve.
Yes, scoliosis is a lateral or sideways curvature of the spine. It often involves rotation, too. Signs someone might look for include uneven shoulder height, one hip appearing higher than the other, or asymmetry in the rib cage when bending forward.
Okay. And shoulder blade position.
Right.
You mentioned winging earlier. Where should they sit, ideally?
Ideally, the scapulae should lie fairly flat against the rib cage. The top border is usually around the level of the T2 or T3 vertebra, and the inner border, the one closest to the spine, should be about 3 to 4 inches away from the spinous processes.
Okay, now, forward head posture. Super common, right? Laptops, phones.
Oh, incredibly common. And this raises that important question again. What happens biomechanically when your head juts forward?
The weight feels heavier.
Massively heavier. Because of leverage, that torque principle again, for every inch your head moves forward, the perceived weight on your neck and upper back muscles increases substantially.
Wow.
So those muscles in the back of your neck and upper back get incredibly strained, trying to hold that bowling ball up against gravity. And often, to compensate, the chest and upper back might sink or round backwards. It creates a whole chain reaction. Key landmarks for checking head placement are C7 at the base of the neck, your jawline, mandible, the base of the skull, occipital bone, and your ears relative to your shoulders.
It's a cascade effect, not just a neck problem.
Rarely, just isolated.
And lower body posture. Knees and feet.
Source mentions things like bow-legged, genu verum, knock-kneed, genu valgum, and hyperextended knees, genu recurvatum. These can sometimes be structural, just how your bones are shaped, but often there's a postural component related to muscle imbalances or habits.
Okay.
Interestingly, the vastus medialis, one of your quad muscles on the inner thigh, plays a crucial role in protecting a straight knee from locking back into hyperextension.
VMO. Got it. And feet. Pronation, supination.
Yeah. In supination, your foot tends to roll outward, so your weight is more on the outside edge, often associated with a high arch. In pronation, the foot rolls inwards, weight more on the inside edge, often associated with a flattening arch. A certain amount of pronation is normal and necessary for shock absorption when walking, but excessive pronation can cause issues up the chain.
Right. The foot's the foundation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And finally, connecting this all back to movement, we often see common compensations during exercises or functional tests.
Like cheating.
Sort of, yeah. The body finding the path of least resistance, often using stronger muscles to do the job of weaker ones. For example, in a basic abdominal curl-up, it's really common for people to overuse their hip flexors, like that psoas, instead of their abs.
Okay.
What else? Yeah. In a side-lying leg lift, femoral abduction test, people often use their TFL muscle at the front side of the hip instead of the target muscle, the gluteus medius. Mm. When lifting the arm out to the side, humeral abduction, the upper trapezius muscle in the neck shoulder often jumps in too early and elevates the shoulder blade instead of letting the rotator cuff and deltoid initiate.
Ah, the shoulder shrug lift.
Exactly. And in a prone leg extension, lying on stomach, lifting leg back, the hamstrings often dominate instead of the gluteus maximus due doing the primary work of hip extension.
So seeing these patterns helps identify weaknesses or imbalances.
Precisely. And the source makes a great point. Joint ranges of motion provide a baseline for what's considered normal functional movement. They aren't necessarily targets to exceed, especially at the cost of stability or control. More isn't always better.
Quality over quantity. A crucial distinction.
Very much so, especially for long-term well-being.
So wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you? Listening, we've covered a lot, from the bones up through muscles, physics, posture. This deep dive really shows how intricate, how interconnected, and honestly, how brilliant our bodies are.
Truly amazing machines.
And having even a basic grasp of these principles, anatomy, biomechanics, posture, gives you a completely new way to think about how you move, doesn't it?
It really does. It empowers you to make potentially small adjustments that can make a big difference in how you feel, how you perform, whether it's daily life or exercise.
Less pain, more efficiency.
Hopefully. Yeah. Understanding these mechanics helps us appreciate our body's resilience, but also spot where things might be going awry or where we could use a bit more support or awareness.
Yeah.
Which leads to, I think, a final thought for you to ponder. How might actively observing your own posture and movement patterns, maybe just for a few moments throughout your day, how might that change your overall physical awareness and maybe even your well-being? What's one small insight from today that you could apply next time you're walking or sitting or even just standing in line?